Becker, and she's a psychotherapist, family and marriage therapist, and the author of Surviving the Storm, a workbook for telling your cancer story. And Cheryl, I wanted to start this segment. I just have to read this because it just, you mentioned something about poetry, and many of your chapters start with a poem. And this was one that I had never read before. Mm-hmm. And it's by Maya Steen, and it's called How to Climb a Mountain. And I want to share this with our listeners because it just knocked my socks off. She says, or writes, "Make no mistake, this will be an exercise in staying vertical." This will be an exercise in staying vertical. Yes, there will be a view later, a wide swath of open sky. But in the meantime, tree and stone. If you're lucky, a hawk will coast overhead, scanning the forest floor. If you're lucky, a set of wildflowers will keep you cheerful. Mostly, though, a steady sweat, your heart fluttering indelicately, a solid ache perforating your calves. This is called work. What you will come to know eventually and simply as movement, as all the evidence you need to make your way. Forget where you were. That story is no longer true. Forget where you were. That story is no longer true. Level your gaze to the trail you're on, and even the dark won't stop you.
Yeah,
I think that we can all relate to that. I mean, whether we have a diagnosis of an illness, it's just walking through life. Mm-hmm. The exercise in staying vertical and forget where you were. That story is no longer true, and just level your gaze, you know.
It's like walking through a storm, like, you know, the title. It's just I just got to walk through the storm.
And that's called How to Climb a Mountain by Maya Steen. I thank you for that one. And in talking about that, we talk about our life after diagnosis. Okay, here we are. And you talk about how we're like kind of hypervigilant if we've had that kind of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of always kind of nagging there with us. Can you say something about that?
Particularly at the beginning of finishing treatment, there's actually about 30 years ago, a doctor and physician named Fitzhugh Mullins coined a phrase called the seasons of survivorship. The first season is called acute survivorship. That's where you are, the initial diagnosis, you're in treatment, it's a lot of structure like we've just talked about. Then the next season is called extended survivorship. This is where treatment ends and you still have appointments. You still have, you know, scans and tests, but gradually they fall off. And the weekly appointments, the treatments, all eyes are not on you at this point. This is a time of waiting, of watching, and you're right, hypervigilance, because it's like, you know, is that pimple? Is that we call it the cancer pimple. You know, is that, or is that ache, that pain? You know, how do I call? They say 2 weeks, but what if I don't call? So there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fearfulness because the trauma of it all is still, I really think it's held in the body. Plus the trauma of the treatment is still in the body. So part of it is moving that trauma out. And the way I know, there's many ways to work with trauma. The way I know is by telling the story, moving it through, talking about it, not letting it lodge in there. And so it's really scary. And then, you know, you might go have the test, the blood test, and usually the wait for results is always endless. waiting for it. Am I okay? To me, the sort of the anthem through this part is, am I okay? Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to be okay? Can I have hope for my life, or, you know, will it come back? There, you just don't know at the beginning. So it takes a while to move through that. And let's face it, the shadow is always there. It's going to be there mm-hmm. for the rest of your life. And that's just how it is.
You have a section in the book, Cheryl, that helps us to know how to talk to your physician mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, healthcare mm-hmm. practitioners. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things there. You advise that it might be really good, besides a series of questions, which I found really helpful. You know, you talk about, you know, this series of questions, the essentials, mm-hmm, what to bring, mm-hmm, questions mm-hmm. to ask your doctor, mm-hmm. questions about post-treatment and what happens as you move on, questions and just thoughts and ideas and feelings, your concerns. So you have just a whole list of very, very wonderful questions. And one of the things that you suggest and is to have an advocate mm-hmm. go with mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. to your appointments. Mm-hmm. And I found this just recently. I have a friend who is diagnosed with breast cancer, mm-hmm. and she asked me to drive her to her appointment. Mm-hmm. And she, I said, I'd love to do that. And I said, do you know what you're going to ask your oncologist? And she said, yeah, I have a series of questions. And I said, do you want to share those with me? So I took a copy of her questions mm-hmm. with me as we went to her doctor. Mm-hmm. And I had my notebook. Mm-hmm. And so I was taking notes as we were going through her appointment and what he was saying. And I was kind of helping her keep track of the mm-hmm, questions mm-hmm, she wanted to ask him. Mm-hmm. And then I reminded her at some time during the appointment, you know, do you want to mm-hmm. ask Dr. Support
this? That's wonderful, yeah.
And she said, yeah.
That's wonderful.
And then afterwards she thanked me. She said, I'm so glad you were there. And then I did an email to her afterwards, and I said, here are the notes that I took. And she said, oh, I'm so thankful. I had forgotten that he had said that. Yes. So I felt useful to her, and I
Absolutely.
Wanted to be useful.
Absolutely.
I wanted to be supportive, and I felt really supportive.
Yeah.
And so what comments do you have about that kind of process?
I mean, I think you just told a beautiful story of what the best possible scenario in a horrible scenario is, not only for your friend, but for you. And in many ways for whoever the provider is too, because, you know, if they have a sense that, okay, there's some clarity here. So that to me is the best case scenario. Going from that to maybe what isn't, like, what if somebody doesn't have anyone? You know, sometimes if it's okay, I can suggest to somebody, you know, if you're unfortunately you don't have a support system, which is really sad and horrible, mm-hmm. You know, ask the provider, can I record this? Always ask.
You know, I need to say something there, because I remember years ago when my husband had walking pneumonia, mm. and I was in the hospital room when his doctor came in, and they were talking about things, and I had my little computer and I was taking mm-hmm. notes, and I asked the doctor, "How do you spell that?" Mm. And he got really uptight. Mm. He got like, "Oh my God, what's she doing?" Mm-hmm. And I could hear him. I could know what was going through his brain. Mm-hmm. Oh, is she taking notes? Am I going to have a lawsuit here or something? He was like very defensive. And Michael was feeling so terrible, but Michael reached over and took the doctor's hand and used his first name. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Marco, she's here to advocate for me.
Yeah, I see that.
We
yeah.
all want the same thing."
That's nice, yeah.
And you could just see him to start to relax and not to be defensive. And but it took Michael to say, to hear the patient to say, no, she's just here to help me.
I really love the part where it's we're all here for the same thing.
Yes.
Because I have developed over the years a tremendous compassion for the providers.
Yes.
Often people are real mad at them and they expect, you know, they're expected to be able to provide a certainty or some kind of knowledge, you know, like you said, you're like some secret of the universe. When they're human beings, they can't tell you. And so there's a lot of pressure on them. Their caseloads are phenomenal. And so I get it. But I like that. I think that would be a beautiful suggestion to say, like, if you're in the office and you see someone start to get defensive, it's like, you know, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
I've written
because they're human too.
They're human, and
they're under a lot of pressure, as you
they
say.
They totally are. And
I know another thing that you say in your book. I think it was so good. You know, we come to our appointment with all these questions. And you suggest not to just barrage them with questions to begin with, because doctors and physicians and assistants and whoever, the professionals, they have a whole checklist that they are required to go through.
They have to do it.
And if you just allow them to go through that checklist first, maybe, then they'll be more amenable to start to hear your questions if they're not answered within that.
Exactly. Well, that whole section where it's, again, like we're talking, is to be sure, and on our parts as the patients or the friends, the partners, we need to make sure that we see them as human beings and treat them with respect. Even when it's kind of like, oh, they're not returning my call, all that still, if you see someone like another human being, you relate to them in that way, you give them the chance, then everything's going to go better, right? So, yes, it's really important to allow them to be human with them. And I think if we can start to create that in a medical system that's really struggling.
So that's really...
We'll be better.
We'll be better. And that's really the co-creation that's going on, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say a little bit about the writing that we talked about earlier. The uncertainty is there. Fear, anxiety, even depression may be there. And so... In writing, I think you really advocate that it's really important to not rush it. It's not that you're emphasizing the fear, but if you don't write about it without judgment, let the fear, give it some room, give it some air, let it out of the closet.
Absolutely.
What can you say about that? Well, actually, we'll talk about that in just one moment.
Hold
that question.
Okay.
Because I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Cheryl Crowder, and she is the author of Surviving the Storm, a workbook for telling your cancer story. And her website is CherylCrowder.com. That's C-H-E-R-Y-L Crowder, K-R-A-U-T-E-R, CherylCrowder.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with marriage and family psychotherapist Cheryl Crowder, and she is the author of the guide, Surviving the Storm, a workbook for telling your cancer story. And I want to say that this workbook also is beyond cancer. I mean, it can be for grief. It can be, I can see that it's useful in so many ways. It's
Thank
just
you.
Very, very useful guide. So I was asking you about the writing itself and the writing about fear. Mm-hmm. And so say something about that writing and the importance mm-hmm. of it.
One of the things I think is very important is to acknowledge that fear is going to be present in any of this illness. A fear is present in life. And so my emphasis on fear is not to give it too much power. However, in that saying, like you said, move it out of the closet. I call it the boogeyman of fear. If we let it become too big, it overwhelms us. If we just sort of look at it, touch it, feel it, let it run its course, emotions run through us. And if we just let ourselves be freaked out, terrified, angry, sad, whatever. But in terms of fear, this is a really scary, scary thing we're talking about. To pretend it's not there is kind of nuts, right? So just being able to almost make friends with it in a way that, you know, I'm not going to let you hang around and control me. I'm not going to let you make my decisions for me. But you know what? I'm going to acknowledge you when you're here. And I'll pay attention to you. And, you know, I think we can learn a lot from our fears. So that's the way I would suggest people look at it.
So it's almost like having a dialogue mm-hmm. with your mm-hmm. fear. And mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so, you know, in dialogue, then things de-escalate.
Right.
When we're in dialogue.
You're having a conversation with your fear. And that way, not letting fear be the boss. Mm-hmm. Which I think is the most important part, but to acknowledge that, wow, I'm really terrified. And people around, I think this is, as I'm thinking out loud maybe, perhaps even more important for partners and family members, friends, who sometimes feel like, ooh, well, they're having so much fear, they're having so much pain, I have to like sit back. I can't have a place for my own fears because it might make them more frightened. And so I really want to encourage people who are walking alongside to say, you know, your fear is also real. And it's not going to make anybody suffer more if you have your fears and allow your own fears and not let that trauma get caught in you also.
That's a very good point, because you have a whole section in your workbook about caregivers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I wanted to read something about caregivers. There was one little piece that popped up for me about caregivers. And, you know, of course, they're kind of the forgotten part of all of this. I know that
it's
I
changing,
was...
changing, thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness, thank yeah. goodness. Mm-hmm. I know that I was, I have been caregiver to both my mother-in-law, my mother, actually two mothers-in-law and my mother in their dying. And I remember the part when mother, she couldn't really talk or call out to me, so we decided that she could have a bell that she would ring. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a moment when I just, that hearing that bell ring just was like so painful for me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I realized now it was just a reminder that she was dying. Mm-hmm, every time I heard that bell ring, I would think, oh, I'd forget it for a moment, and then I was reminded. So so if I had had your workbook, I probably could have written about that. But one of the things that popped out for me in your book, you were talking about like the caregiving of a particular woman who was working with her mother. And during treatment, their relationship was so intimate. Mm-hmm. It was so intimate. And I just thought this was an a very articulate statement, and I want to read it because I just think it was so articulate, and you had really posted this. You said one person responded that it was challenging because relationship and roles within the family had to be renegotiated. None of us knew how to be with each other anymore. After treatment, we returned to not discussing anything other than on a surface level. More than the cancer and the fear of death, I think this was what was most difficult for me. I had so often heard about the transformation people can go through during cancer treatment, and I witnessed that with my mom. I wasn't prepared for it to go away. Mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared for returning to a normal life to mean it would almost seem like cancer never existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After treatment was hard because I found myself missing mm-hmm. my mom. Mm-hmm. I was beginning to get to know when she was sick, and I would feel guilty for feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so articulate that then her mom was so open
yes.
and vulnerable
uh-huh, uh-huh.
and sharing, and then now the treatment's over, and then she went back to not
she
being
closed
that
down.
Way.
She closed down. She closed down, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was so poignant for me.
Yeah,
and so
mm-hmm.
these are some of the things that we go through as we help one another and walk this path with
right,
one another.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what can you say to us about caregiving and about helping others and accepting things as they are?
Yeah. The first thing I want to say to both, now the categories are even becoming more evident in the writing. There are formal caregivers, nurses, people like that. And then informal caregivers is what you're talking about and what this woman is talking about. The informal caregivers are those in the home, their parents, their spouses, their partners, their family members. And the first thing I'd say is, don't forget yourself. You've got to remember that you have your own place here. You have your own space. You have your own story. And it's absolutely essential not to lose track of that. So let go of that guilt that you shouldn't feel anything. How can I possibly want anything? How can I possibly feel anything? Well, because you're a human being and this is your loved one. And so, of course, you do. And if it's into when I listen to this story, and this woman actually contributed, she's such an articulate writer. What I would say to her, someone like her, it's like, well, you may have lost that connection that you valued so much during treatment, but you know what? What did you receive from this? As you move forward, how can you stay open? How can you take what you received and not shut down? That's what I would say.
So that's what we have control over, how we receive it and the choices we make in our life.
That's the only thing we got.
I'd like for you to say something about the tyranny of positive mm-hmm. thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that
in
your work. So say something about that.
Right. That's a phrase that was coined, I believe, by Barbara Ehrenreich. She wrote quite a scathing book, as is her usual style, about her own cancer,
which
she hated the pain,
She was great.
And she coined the phrase, which I think is magnificent, because, it's really interesting. Like, people don't talk about the gift of diabetes or, what a journey is a heart attack. But with the cancer, I don't actually know why this is, but it all becomes like, wow, this is such a gift and you can do so much with it. And, yes, that's true. But when it becomes a tyrannical, oppressive expectation that you're now supposed to turn a horrible experience into gold, sort of automatically. And like the Maya Stein poem, this is hard work. Transformation is, I'm sure you know this, transformation is hard work. And that's the point. So the tyranny of like how you're all supposed to, cheerily hold hands and
kumbaya.
Yeah, kumbaya and do all these things and get better, be better, don't feel anything. It's an oppression. And I think it needs to really just go away.
And one last point, toward the end of your guide and workbook, you mentioned something about the internet and Google and art,
mm-hmm.
So we're past treatment now, and here we are. We're looking up different things.
Mm-hmm.
And what suggestion do you have for our looking up resources on the internet?
Well, we're talking about Dr. Google, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and oftentimes I know if someone comes in and they're telling me these every horrible possible symptom that could be happening leading to a disaster, I always say, you've been talking to Dr. Google. And now people even laugh about it. Yeah, I've been talking to Dr. Google. What I suggest, though, is ask your physician or ask your provider, what resources would you recommend for the medical aspects of this? And then for the more emotional, what I suggest to people is, you know, look online, find a group that perhaps is your own cancer, or for if you're the caregiver, like who are caregivers, and find a group that you can relate to for the emotional support so that you can sort of swap stories. And no one was more surprised, and I mentioned this in the book, no one was more surprised than me with how much I received from the internet group that I was a part of. Mm-hmm. I was the last person to think that any kind of contact could be had, but what a fantastic resource, again, for someone who's maybe in the middle of nowhere, and there's nobody around to process with, if they can go to the internet and find a group that understands some of the aspects of what they're going through, it's amazing.
Oh, Cheryl, we have so much more to talk about, but I'm going to have to thank you so much for being with us today and encourage people to pick up your guide, "The Surviving the Storm, a Workbook for Telling Your Cancer Story," and go to your website, CherylCrowder.com, and you spell your name, Cheryl Crowder, Crauter.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3620.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Carlene Montes de Oca. I'm the author of Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse. And next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how our dogs and cats can help enhance our health and our well-being.
For the past two decades, CJSF 90.1 FM has been the game-changing radio station people have tuned in to listen, share, discuss, and celebrate. From authors, actors, and entertainers to journalists, business leaders, and sports figures, CJSF has welcomed esteemed guests giving you the best in music, news, and spoken word, undoubtedly changing the sound of community radio since 2003. CJSF, diverse, independent, yours.